Carter.
I'm Eloi.
And I'm Erin.
And if you don't know three black bitches who love true crime, you do now. This is the I Ain't a Killer podcast.
Hey!
Hello.
Hi, Killer Bees.
Welcome. Wait, they haven't skipped a beat.
Yeah.
We've been gone for a minute.
We recorded several episodes at once for you all, so you didn't have to miss out on our lovely entertainment.
Yeah, but, you are welcome.
We haven't recorded in a couple weeks.
Yeah. It's graduation season, it's wedding season, concert season. I'm like, God damn.
All the seasons.
I just want to stay in the house at this point. Shaky knees got me. Not being able to go no fucking way.
Right.
So this traffic in Atlanta lately.
Oh, listen, no.
I cannot. It used to be from like 4 to 6. Do y'all
know that? Was all fucking day.
Yeah. No, it's
Sunday at 10:30 a.m.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's like you're going to be in traffic regardless.
I hate going into the city.
Yeah, no, same.
Other cities are like, oh, you know, we'll just wait it out. There ain't no waiting it out. Like, you might as well just leave now.
Exactly.
Right. Because you're going to be here till tomorrow.
Make sure your gas tank is full. It's hitting L.A. levels at this point.
Right.
And the people will be like, oh, you know, I stay in Clayton County. I know you don't want to come all the way down. I'm like, friend, that's preferable.
Right. That's just as far as going through the city.
Listen. Because going into Atlanta is like, and we don't have no mass transportation basically.
So. Right.
Yeah. But anyway, enough talk about our city. Because we're going to be here all fucking day.
Right.
We go on and on.
Literally. So we missed y'all. Well, we said this already, but we missed y'all. Y'all didn't miss us.
But
there's been a lot of things that have happened since we recorded last. A lot of stuff. I know some folks put it in the Facebook group. I think we posted some on our Instagram. But one of the things that happened was this story that I'm about to read now.
And shout out to Daphne for dropping it in the Facebook
group. Yes, thank you, Daphne. So this is from ABC News. It was published on May 9th of 2023. The title is Woman Who Wrote Book on Grief Following Husband's Death Accused of His Murder. And this is very much giving that story from like forever ago. Mm-hmm. Do you remember what I'm talking about?
That woman who wrote a book like How to Kill Your Husband.
And then, yeah.
And then went up. Isn't she the one that went up there at 7 a.m.?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then we were like, damn, you really had to hate him.
This
to wake
I'm
up.
I want to know the story because, girl.
They made a Lifetime movie about it. I haven't watched it, but yeah, that's
I'm obsessed with it.
I think it's literally called How to Kill Your Husband or How to Murder Your Husband, something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to have to watch that.
Girl, it's never that serious. Okay, y'all do it later.
Right. Okay, anyway. So a Utah woman who published a children's book on processing grief following the death of her husband last year has now been accused of poisoning him with a lethal dose of fentanyl, court documents show. Corey Richens, that's actually cute. It's Corey, but it's spelled K-O-U-R-I.
K-O-U-R-I. Okay.
That's cute.
That is cute.
Corey Richens, age 33, faces charges including aggravated murder in the connection with the death of her husband, Eric Richens.
Wait, she's the murderer. It's less cute now.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I was the kid.
Sorry.
Right?
The husband. Sorry. The name is cute. Like the situation is not.
Yeah.
So her husband, Eric Richens, age 39, who was found dead at the foot of their bed on March 4th, 2022. While appearing on a Good Things Utah segment last month on Salt Lake City ABC affiliate KTVX to promote her new children's book, Corey Richens said her husband died, quote, unexpectedly. Prosecutors allege that Eric Richens was poisoned by a lethal dose of fentanyl on the night of March 3rd, 2022, according to the charging document.
And I'll take barely none of that.
Mm-mm. Corey Richens allegedly told police following his death that they were celebrating her closing on a house for her business that night, and she, quote, made Eric a Moscow Mule in the kitchen and brought it to their bedroom where Eric consumed it while sitting in bed. She allegedly said she went to sleep with one of their children who was having a night terror and returned to her and her husband's bedroom around 3 a.m. where she found him cold to the touch. Corey Richens was supposedly attempting to perform CPR, but when first responders arrived, they advised that it had not appeared that she had done any CPR due to the large amount of blood that came from Eric's mouth.
Ooh. What?
Is that normal for fentanyl?
I don't know. That sounds scary as fuck, but also, what does blood coming out of his mouth have to do with her doing CPR or not doing CPR?
I guess they would shut, like, If she did, it probably would have been messy. Like, she would have blood on her. Okay. That's what I'm assuming.
Like, the blood would have, like, had more. It would have, like, been moving more.
Yeah. There would have just been evidence of it. Yeah.
Okay.
An autopsy determined that Eric Richens died from a fentanyl overdose and that the level of fentanyl in his system was 5 times the lethal dosage. The medical examiner indicated the fentanyl was illicit fentanyl, not medical grade, and that it was likely ingested orally. Detectives obtained a search warrant for their residence following the toxicology report, including for electronics. Corey Richens allegedly told law enforcement that upon going to bed, she did not use her phone until calling 911, though the phone had been locked and unlocked multiple times during that period, and messages had been sent and received during that time and deleted, according to the documents. A search of Corey Richens' phone also uncovered several communications with an acquaintance of hers who had various drug counts.
Wait. Something is really...
What?
They can tell when you lock and unlock your phone?
You can look that up on Screen Time.
What? I did not know that.
Yeah, like, you can literally go to your settings and go to your Screen Time, and it can show you... I don't know if it shows you the exact time of it, but it shows you how many times you lock it or pick up your phone and all this different,
okay,
like, information.
Okay, not that anybody should be doing murders. Well, actually, there's some case. Never mind. That's not relevant. But you cannot have a phone and commit a murder at the same
exactly.
time.
Exactly. This is 2020. Like, yeah, no.
So, look, this says pickups, and it says when my first pickup was, what time the pickup was,
and the
how many times.
That's so
you can
creepy.
Literally look that up.
Oh,
I know. So today I already have 50 pickups, which
damn,
is that embarrassing?
I don't know what a normal amount of pickups is.
I don't either.
Yeah, my phone is attached to my hand.
Yeah. Right.
It's the internet, it's your communication. It's every time I need to know what 10 divided by 2 is.
Yeah. Yes. Type it in. I don't want to think about that.
Like, I need my calculator.
Goodness.
Wow. And I'm sure, I mean, that's just on the Apple, like, settings. I'm sure they could find out way more.
Wow.
During an interview with detectives earlier this month, the acquaintance allegedly said that sometime between December 21 and February 22, Corey Richens allegedly texted them asking for prescription pain medication for an investor who had a back injury. And the acquaintance left hydrocodone pills at a house the defendant owned and was flipping. About 2 weeks later, Corey Richens allegedly contacted... Oh, someone's here. Do you need to go check it?
Sorry.
Okay. A little breaking the fourth wall here.
As a delivery.
Okay. So about 2 weeks later, Corey Richens allegedly contacted the acquaintance again because her investor wanted something stronger and asked for some of the Michael Jackson stuff.
Oh my God.
What?
No.
And asked specifically for fentanyl. The acquaintance allegedly procured 15 to 30 fentanyl pills in exchange for $900 on February 11, 2022. 3 days later, following a Valentine's Day dinner at their home, Eric Richens became very ill and believed that he had been poisoned. Eric told a friend that he thought his wife was trying to poison him.
Oh, man, she's going down the road.
According to the search warrant, Eric Richens took one bite of a sandwich his wife bought him that Valentine's Day and broke into hives and couldn't breathe. He reportedly used an EpiPen and took Benadryl and passed out. When he woke up, he immediately called his business partner about the incident. Corey Richens allegedly contacted the acquaintance about 2 weeks later, asking for another $900 of fentanyl pills, which were procured on February 26th of 2022.
Damn, this bitch won't slip at all.
6 days later, on March 4th, 2022, Eric was found dead of a fentanyl overdose. Corey Richens has also been charged with 3 counts of possession of drugs with intent to distribute. An attorney for Corey Richens told ABC News they were unable to comment at this time. Her next hearing is scheduled for May 19th. Corey and Eric were married for 9 years and had 3 young sons together. Several of his family members allegedly told investigators they suspected his wife had something to do with his death. Excuse me. They advised he warned them that if something happened to him, she was to blame. Prior to his death, Eric Richens removed his wife from his will and life insurance and was looking into a divorce and wanted his kids taken care of.
Mm.
The couple was also allegedly arguing over a nearly $2 million property she wanted to flip, according to the search warrant. The day after Eric's death, his wife allegedly signed the closing papers on the home. The search warrant also noted that in January 2022, Corey Richens allegedly updated her husband's life insurance policy agreement with his business partner to make herself the sole beneficiary. Whoa. That's just 2 months before he died. The insurance company notified her husband and his business partner, and they changed it back to being each other's beneficiary. Corey Richens told KTVX during her interview last month for Good Things Utah that his death completely took us all by shock. Quote, my kids and I kind of wrote this book on the different emotions and grieving processes that we've experienced last year, she said. Quote, I am hoping it can help. It can kind of help other kids deal with this and kind of find happiness some way or another. The dedication of her book, which was published in March, states it is to, quote, my amazing husband and a wonderful father.
Wow. Wow.
She did that shit.
That's horrible.
She didn't even cover her tracks.
That's what I'm saying. Didn't take no care to cover her tracks. You bought fentanyl twice, and then you failed the first time you did it. He knew. He changed all his
shit. He knew.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He knew
he was being poisoned.
Which is wild that he didn't get out of that house.
Yeah.
Or get away from her, or still took, food and drink from her, suspecting that he had already been poisoned. That's sad.
Because I feel like, I guess, I don't know what it would be like to be in that situation, to be honest. But if you suspect you're being poisoned, I think you should go get some blood tests.
Yeah.
Immediately and figure that out and then get your kids out of there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, most definitely. Yeah, I don't know. That's not to victim blame at all, but I can't imagine being in that situation and doing anything other than getting the fuck out of that
house.
Yeah. Because I've been technically poisoned before. Not orally, but when I was living elsewhere, it was a house with a lot of people, and I was beefing with a couple of people. And very soon after those arguments, I had nail polish remover and my face wash, and it burned the fuck out of my face. And to this day, even when I'm around people who I trust, I don't leave my phone unlocked. Yeah. Well, I do leave my phone unlocked, but I don't leave it unlocked around somebody who I think will run through it or whatever.
Yeah,
and I don't trust food, drink, or anything like that. That's just been sitting out. I don't trust stuff that I put on my face.
That's
around,
horrible.
Me personally, even hearing that, I would have dipped.
Yeah,
I would have just packed an overnight bag and went to go stay with my business partner or whatever the fuck, because that shit is so fucking scary. So I can't imagine this being deadly, because that wasn't deadly. So this is he took it and he could not have, he could have done that EpiPen or whatever and then not woken up.
Right. Yeah.
That's fucking crazy.
Oh, I'm sorry that happened to you, friend.
Yes, yeah.
I feel like people don't I don't know what their intentions were with the nail polish remover, but I feel like people don't understand how bad chemicals can be if they're not used for the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they were intentionally trying to burn you, but that could have really, really, really been bad.
Yeah.
No. And I feel like people don't necessarily think about that when they do shit like that. I don't know.
Maybe they ass beat.
Yeah, to this day, I don't I say my hellos and goodbyes, but I'm not super, super close to the unit that
That is so wild. Mm-mm-mm. But yeah, I feel like the children's book, I feel like she kind of did that to be let's see how far I can get away with this.
Yes, exactly.
It's so wild to kill your children's parent.
Yeah.
Exactly.
If they're not actively harming them. Mm-hmm. If y'all not getting along, that's one thing. But to kill your kid's other parent and knowing that that's going to traumatize them for the rest of their lives. And then even the small chance that they could find out that you did it.
Mm-hmm.
Then they don't have, now they don't have either parent because she's going to jail.
Exactly. Yeah. And they know they're going to know.
Yeah.
So now you don't have that $2 million property that you was arguing over. You don't have no money and you don't have your kids. You don't have your freedom.
What was the point?
It's never that fucking serious. And that's literally what I was thinking. I was like, if it's not self-defense, then what the fuck did you do that for? Oh,
right.
Wow.
Damn.
Well, I think we have an update, right?
Yes. On another story. I'll try to read this article fairly quickly so we get to the main story. But a few weeks ago, LUI did the story of Lori Vallow Daybell. And we have an update from an article also from ABC News that was published on May 12th of this year. So just a few days ago when you all are listening to this. So the jury has found Lori Daybell Wow. Adria found Lori Vallow Daybell. Her name is a mouthful.
Yeah, it is.
It sure is.
LVD. That's what I'm going to call her. Okay. Adria found LVD guilty of killing two of her children in what prosecutors argued was a doomsday plot. She was also found guilty of conspiring to kill her children and her husband's first wife, Tamara Daybell. She faces up to life in prison without parole. LVD and her husband, Chad Daybell, were both charged with two counts of first-degree murder for the 2019 deaths of her children, Joshua J.J. Vallow, 7, and Tylee Ryan, 16, whose remains were found on an Idaho property belonging to Chad Daybell following a month-long search. The jury deliberated for approximately 4 hours on Thursday and 2 hours on Friday before reaching its verdict, which was read before a packed Boise courtroom and also live-streamed by the court. Judge Stephen Boyce asked those in attendance to refrain from making any loud outbursts while the verdict was read. I would have had a hard time with that one.
Yeah.
Prosecutors said they were very pleased with the jury's verdict, but declined to comment further, given the pending case against Chad Daybell. We want to assure each of you that we remain committed to pursuing justice for Tylee Ryan, J.J. Vallow, and Tammy Daybell. Madison County Prosecuting Attorney Rob Wood and Fremont County Prosecuting Attorney Lindsay Blake said in a joint statement. We also want to express a sincere appreciation to the many members of law enforcement and the community who tirelessly worked together to hold Lori Vallow Daybell accountable. The defense declined to comment on the verdict. The verdict followed a six-week trial during which prosecutors argued that the couple thought the children were zombies and murdered them. This story was so just unhinged.
Yeah.
All right, y'all. We'll be right back after we pay some bills.
Are you a huge cunt?
Us too.
Wait, can we even say cunt?
Of course. It's empowering these days. Cunt, 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 cunt. I'm Ange Balasone, a.k.a. the drag queen, Fat Girl Gina.
And I'm Mike Fales, just a normal gay guy, I guess?
And we're the hosts of The Big Cunty Couch,
a gorgeous new talk show podcast where we invite queers and peers to sit bitch and be fierce on a huge-ass couch
while we gab about all things gay.
So come get cozy
and cunty
with us. We're pan for platforms, so find us anywhere online and get listening, sweetie.
Or watching.
Or both.
Otherwise, why the hell am I in full drag?
And we'll see you on The Big Oh, wait. I thought we were going to say that together.
No. On The Big Cunty Couch. Mwah.
JJ's grandfather, Larry Woodcock, who along with his wife had reported the children missing, thanked the jurors for their honest, fair, and righteous verdict. What they went through, what they saw is mind-boggling, Woodcock, who has been in the courtroom throughout the trial, told reporters outside the courthouse following the verdict. I hope that nobody ever has to go through this. I hope nobody ever has to see and hear the details of what happened to JJ, to Tylee, and to Tammy. When asked for his final message to LVD, he started singing the Willie Nelson song, The Party's Over.
Okay. Choice,
but, you know, whatever you need to do to get through that. Mm-hmm. JJ, I love you. Papa wishes you were here in other circumstances. Tylee, Papa loves you, Woodcock said, crying. Tammy, I'm sorry for what happened to you. My heart hurts. My heart hurts for these three. Wood, the lead prosecutor, told the jury during closing statements on Thursday that LVD set a plan for the children's murder in motion in October 2018 using money, power, and sex, and she and her husband used religion to manipulate others. It does not matter what they believed. It matters what they did, Wood said. They can believe whatever they want, but when it's murder, that's different. Defense attorney Jim Archibald characterized LVD as a devoted mother who loved her children and Jesus, but that all changed at the end of 2018 when she met Chad. Is Lori a leader or a follower of Chad? She so desperately wanted to be a leader, but she is following Chad, Archibald said. During the trial, jury heard text messages that prosecutors said were sent between LVD and her husband in the weeks prior to their disappearance. The messages discussed demons inhabiting the children's bodies and that they were weary taking care of demons. I can't even imagine saying that about my kids, but...
Right.
LVD reportedly texted her husband to please ask the Lord to take them, and days after, if he thinks there is a perfectly orchestrated plan to take the children, to which he reportedly responded, there is a plan being orchestrated for the children. Archibald dismissed the text message evidence presented by prosecutors during closing statements. Of the 15,000 texts and evidence, show me one that says, when are you killing Tylee? It's not there, Archibald told the jury on Thursday. Of the 15,000 text messages, show me one where Lori says, when are you killing JJ, by the way? There is no such text. The children were last seen alive in September 2019 and were reported missing by their extended family members to police in November 2019. LVD and Chad were indicted on murder charges nearly a year after authorities discovered the remains of her children on the Daigle property in June 20. In closing statements, Wood pushed back against the defense's characterization of the defendant as a good mother, saying, "You can't have a good mom if she doesn't report her children missing or dead. We have the evidence in spades. You must convict her," he told the jury. Among the revelations during the trial, a DNA expert testified for the state that a strand of hair attached to duct tape found among the remains matched LVD's DNA profile. Jurors also heard emotional jail calls from LVD's sister and surviving son confronting her about the children's murders. Her sister, Summer Shiflett, testified that she initially trusted LVD until she learned the bodies of the children had been found on Chad's property. They go on to talk about the trial. I'm not sure the rest of this is super relevant, but that is the update.
Wow.
Wow. Chad's trial is separate, so it's going to start later.
Ooh.
Yep, that is a whole ride.
Yeah, that's... Mm-hmm.
I think the part that I'm shook by is the fact that it took 6 weeks for them to get to this, yeah, to this conclusion. The evidence was so strong. So why did it take all this time? I wonder how, like, you know, jurors work. I've never been on a jury. So I'm like, what was happening in that room for them to take that long? Because the evidence was...
I think the whole trial took 6 weeks. I don't think the jurors took 6 weeks.
Oh, so the deliberation was shorter.
Yeah.
It should have been 10 minutes.
They called like 60 separate witnesses. That's just the prosecution.
Ooh.
Oh, my God. It says the defense didn't call any witnesses. Well,
because they didn't need to.
Because they didn't defend her.
Right.
They probably just defended her just to satisfy their duty of, well, she had probably a public defender or something.
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, who would they call?
Did that shit just so they can get paid. Because there's nothing to defend.
Nothing.
I'm like, girl, you know you did that shit. Let's just go to court.
Wow. 60 witnesses.
60 witnesses. Probably people from their churches, friends, family friends.
Yeah. Jordy.
Those little soft snores on my dog.
The cutest little puppy. Okay, well, I guess we'll be back with the main story.
All right, we are back with our main story. Let me make sure I'm close enough to the mic here. All right, so... this story sounded really familiar while I was doing it. I searched all of our episodes because Spotify has this thing where you can search within a show or within a playlist now.
Oh.
Have y'all ever heard of the Green River Killer?
No.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Because it sounded so familiar. I'm like, fuck, if I get up there and they already did it, I'm going to be so pissed.
I know I didn't.
All right, cool. All right, so... this is the story of the Green River Killer. Trigger warnings for child molestation, for strangulation, for necrophilic acts, and whorephobia. Also, violence against sex workers. I needed to put that in there. And then also, as trigger warnings come up, I'll definitely put some extra reminders in there because this story is kind of wild. All right. So, Seattle, Washington has this area called the Strip, and it's basically like a red light district for Washington. You can rent hotels by the hour. They're super, super popular in the 80s. Whole bunch of strip clubs and like topless bars and things like that.
This is D.C. or Washington State, sorry.
Seattle, Washington.
Okay.
Yeah. I keep forgetting we have a Washington, D.C. I'm just like, yeah, the state. Yeah. Like, no, okay. That's the whole thing. So a lot of the women who work in the district, it was pretty much known that they came from like abusive homes, or they would be like runaways. A lot of underage girls would run away and like go there to like, you know, stack their money or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people just like turn to sex work to make ends meet. It was already kind of known as like a super dangerous type of strip or whatever. Obviously, because we know like law enforcement and just culture in general does not care about sex workers at all.
Right. Yeah.
So it was near this river called the Green River, and the Green River, it literally looks green. Like if you look at pictures of it or whatever, I was watching a documentary about it, and it runs green. It looks like it's just like full of algae or something.
you know, kind of how like rivers look when they dye them for like
St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, the St. Patrick's Day. Yeah, like it was not that bright green, but it's like a nice like earthy looking green or whatever, and it runs that way all the time. So it's named after its color. And in 1982, there's, you know, people go up and down the river in boats like all the time or whatever. So this man, he's going down the river in his boat, and he notices what looks like a mannequin on the side of the river.
It's not a mannequin.
Yeah, it's not a mannequin. Yes. And it, my first thought was like, I'm so scary. Like, I just, I don't know. Is my, yeah. Is acting up again?
No, no, you're good.
Okay.
You're good now, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I'm so scary. Like, I don't know. If I was in a boat and I saw, even if I did see a mannequin, it would look creepy to me. Because mannequins look fucking creepy.
Yeah, mannequins are terrifying.
So he got closer to it and he realized that it was a body. And
I would never leave my house again.
Yeah, no, same. And I'm like,
trauma.
Y'all want a free boat? Because I don't need it nowhere.
A boat up for grabs.
So, can y'all still hear me?
Yeah.
Because I can't hear myself anymore. Hold on, let me.
Oh, okay. Let's fix you.
I keep saying every week I'm going to get a new cord and I'm out.
One time I ordered you one, but it didn't come, so I had to cancel the order, and then I forgot to reorder it.
Oh. Okay. I'm going to get it. Let's see. I just need to do it and then like not touch it.
I just don't understand how we can hear you, but you can't hear yourself.
Yeah, that's weird.
I don't get technology.
Oh, never mind. It was...
Oh, your headphone was
in? It was a headphone. Okay, cool.
All right.
I'm just going to not touch it. So, can y'all hear me now?
Yeah.
So,
The
car can't. Can you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I forgot where I was, but I'm just going to start off at the mannequin part. I'm scared of mannequins. I'm scared of them for the same reason people are scared of clowns. Like, they're just so creepy to me. Okay, so it turns out that it was a body. Of course, the police show up and investigate the scene. And while they're, you know, removing the body from the river, they find two other bodies.
Oh. Mm-mm.
So these bodies are in...
People wonder why I don't fuck with fresh water. I'm not getting in nobody's river, nobody's lake, like... No, yeah. I'm not doing it.
And then it's wild that like we have such a heavy like surveillance culture, but like the main areas that are like secluded and like mm-hmm. perfect for somebody doing crime always be just so unsurveilled. Like it's right. Just, yeah. So they find these bodies in clusters and they immediately come to the conclusion that this is somebody who was picked up from the strip.
Mm-hmm.
And also, this is an organized sexual psychopath, like, because of, you know, the bodies being in clusters and also, you know, them being in the river and being so close to the strip. So that September, they find, let's see, 6 other bodies. So the women are Opal Mills, Cynthia Hines, Deborah Lorraine Estes, and a woman named Linda Rule, who was known in the area for, like, her boyfriend was, like, her pimp, basically. Mm-hmm. She was really young. I think she was, like, 17, 18 years old. A woman named Mary Bridget Meehan. She was 8 months pregnant at the time.
8 months.
8 months she pregnant. And then another woman named Marcia Chapman. She was a black woman. She was known by one of the detectives, who I'll talk about in a second. She was a black woman. She had 3 kids. She lived out of this extended stay / like apartment or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just doing whatever she could to like take care of her kids.
Mm-hmm.
So when times got hard, like she did what she had to do to make ends meet or whatever. And, you know, she started working on the strip. So the detective was named the detective whose name is Faye Brooks, like knew of her and like knew her story or whatever, and just like would keep up with her from time to time or whatever. So when they found Marcia Chapman's body in the river, she said like she just didn't have any words. She was just so hurt by her passing because she knew that like this was a woman who, not trying to like separate her from the other victims or anything, she never said it like that. She was just like, I knew this person. She's a mother. Like she was doing this to like take care of her family and stuff like that, as a lot of people do.
Right.
And so it just hurt to kind of like know her and then like see her body
have that
washed up in the river.
Yeah.
Exactly. So by the end of 1982, they found 15 girls in total.
And nobody noticed this, these women were missing.
They noticed, but like they all worked the strip. So yeah. It's not really much you can do, because when you have most of them being runaways, when you have most of them being like unhoused folks and stuff like that. And then, of course, law enforcement's attitudes towards sex workers. It's like
it makes me think about that term you taught me, the no human involved.
I literally thought about that. This is immediately what came to mind.
I think about that so much. It pisses me off every time I remember it.
I think about it all the time. And honestly, even though I don't do sex work, it just, I feel like, because you know, we're only as safe as the least safe among us, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, okay, yeah, I'm scared of the police. I'm terrified of the police. But that is another level of like disconnection from humanity. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
For you to like put people in this category because of the oldest profession in time. Like,
yeah.
You know, that's so scary. And that's literally what I was thinking about, the no humans involved thing that we did in the Cali case. So they heard rumors that it was probably a police officer because of, you know, how easy it was for this person to move around, for how easy it was for them to dump bodies, but in clusters. Because mm-hmm. it was never just like, oh, just one body. It was always like, okay, we find one, we find five. We find one, we find two. You know, that kind of thing. So it was like heavily believed that it was a police officer because of the access that they had. So now we're into 1983. By June in 1983, 26 bodies were found.
Holy shit.
And by this time, the bodies had started to move upward because I think like it became the area.
How are they not keeping an eye on the fucking river at this point? Like what?
Like after the first five or whatever, why don't literally somebody
do something.
I don't know.
So that is why, like, now you start to see them being found in like secluded dump sites and stuff like that. You're still finding bodies in the river, but now you're starting to find like them in like secluded dump sites and stuff like that, because now this area is like super hot or whatever. And that even
so there's no more room.
Exactly.
Also, that's, yeah. Right.
And that further confirms the idea that like it's a police officer, because how is this person able to like get in and out so quick, go unsupervised, you know, stuff like that. And I personally think that, you know, whenever law enforcement like kind of lags on being able to find somebody, I still think that like law enforcement is always involved. That's like the first thing that I think, because, you know, they're famous for having like sex trafficking rings, mm-hmm. and, you know, like they be going out and like
covering
up each other's involvement with sex workers and stuff like that. So I personally still think, even after like researching the whole case, still think that like some sort of law enforcement was involved, because ain't no fucking way. So there's a woman named Maria Melvar. She was actually in a diner with her boyfriend, and like he went like to the restroom or whatever. I think like before they like left the restaurant, when he came out of the restaurant, she wasn't there anymore. Like she wasn't in the vicinity of the restaurant. So he sees a car with her in it. And so he gets in his car, like he's basically saw her being abducted basically. Ooh. And so he hops in the car, follows the car or whatever. And he's like trying to follow the car so like he can get his girlfriend back or whatever. But he lost her at like a right turn. That's like he makes that turn and then he loses her and then he never sees her again.
Oh my
God. So this guy is out here in like broad day abducting people. Like, and yeah, nothing came of it.
I would never recover.
Yeah.
No, I
mean, how do you not blame yourself?
Yeah. Like, I would feel absolutely terrible. So another five bodies were found in that summer. I'm not exactly sure if all of them or if any of them were found in the river. The documentary didn't specify, but I think they were found in like that secluded area that we were talking about, like in a dump site that's not necessarily surveilled. Another five bodies were found in the fall.
What are we up to, like 200?
Right.
Yeah, it gets really bad. Four in the between winter and spring 1984, four bodies were found. And so they found
at least 35.
Yeah, and that's found. So right. I'm sure there's found. Plenty and more that just weren't found. That's
absolutely horrible. And so,
they should be in a state of emergency as a city.
They are in a state of emergency at this point, and they've already formed the Green River Task Force, quote unquote. But like I said, like I personally think that law enforcement be like slowing down investigations into shit.
Yeah.
Because they be involved in like sex trafficking and like abuse of sex workers and shit like that.
Yeah.
So they get to this secluded site. They find a whole bunch of like skeletal remains, they, you know, do their due diligence to find out the identities of these bodies. And one of them was Linda Rule, the girl who I told you her boyfriend was her pimp.
Yeah.
One of them was her. And another body was Mary Meehan, the one who was 8 months pregnant. She was buried in a shallow grave and her baby was next to her.
Oh my God.
Mm-hmm. Oh jeez.
Yeah.
Whoa. So
what I think happened was probably that, like, she had probably gone into labor and had her baby while she had been abducted by him, or he either did something with her body and and removed the baby.
I don't even want to know which it was.
Because
it's wild. So they, you know, the Green River Task Force is like on guard, quote unquote. And I put that in heavy quotations because I don't trust the fucking police. But Faye Brooks, the person who's like the detective, she's actively like determined to find out. And, you know, of course, with prosecution and stuff, they're very determined to find out who this person is. So all of a sudden, the killings just stop, like cold turkey. And for 13 years, there was nothing.
13 years?
13 years, there was nothing. Because this is 1980s. This is like right before DNA starts to become a thing.
Mm-hmm.
So as it becomes a thing, you know, it still wasn't the best. So when they start doing like DNA testing and like technology, it's still not like widely available. But they still keep DNA from like all of the bodies, and they still like keep track of, you know, I guess all of their rape kits and stuff. So now we're in 2001. DNA tech is like pretty advanced and widely available at this point. And so they're running all these matches and they're looking at the DNA of the Green River Killer. And then they're looking at the DNA compared to Marsha Chapman, the black woman who was found.
Mm-hmm.
And they see that the DNA from like the other bodies and Marsha Chapman at like it matches basically.
So that the DNA that wasn't the person that it was found on, all of the victims had that same DNA in them.
Yeah. So the DNA from like the dump sites and mm-hmm. stuff.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. So we know that this is the Green River Killer. We know this is the serial killer basically. And then they match that to Marsha Chapman since she was one of the first bodies that was found, and mm-hmm. it matches. So basically they know that like the person who was killing and dumping people in the river, and then the person who was dumping in the secluded site are the same person.
Okay. It ties it all.
So at this point, they're like, okay, cool. We have a match. We know who it is. And it comes back as a man named Gary Ridgway.
Sounds about right.
So
the name Gary, and I'm so sorry if anybody listening's name is Gary or they have a favorite Uncle Gary or anything, but I feel like so many creepy people are named Gary.
Yeah.
And it's like the name isn't inherently a bad name. I have nothing against the name Gary, but like,
mm-hmm.
it gives creep.
Yeah, no, it does. And I don't know.
Sorry, Gary.
Yeah.
I'm like, why are creep? A popular name for a serial killer is, and it's just, I don't know. It's just
that would be interesting though to see like what the most common serial killer name is.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's like John, like something basic.
Oh, it probably is.
Jeffrey.
Yeah.
I hate this. It probably is something like John. Yeah. Like whatever the most popular name was for people who were born in like the 60s or whatever.
Yeah.
So, Gary Leon Ridgway was born February 18th,
1989. Leon?
Is this a black man?
No.
Oh.
That's another thing that, like, is, you know, weird about the 80s, too. Yeah, there's no, like, racialized name.
Right.
It'd be like white people with middle name Deontay. And shit. I'm like, huh? What the fuck is going on? So, Gary Leon Ridgway was born February 18th, 1949 in Salt Lake City, Utah. I think that makes him a Pisces. I don't know. Have we had any Pisces killers?
We probably have, but I can't remember.
I can't remember. Nope, no one readily comes to mind.
Yeah.
Not the water signs out here killing people.
That's what I'm saying.
All right.
He was the middle of three sons. His parents were Mary and Thomas Ridgway. So, his home life was described as very unstable. His mom was described as domineering, and he witnessed a lot of violence between his parents. His mom worked at a department store while his father was a bus driver. And whenever he would be around his dad would always complain about the sex workers in the area.
Mm.
And just like basically claim out how they're taking over the neighborhood, da 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 da. But his dad also left him in the car while he went to go have sex with sex workers.
That it seems more common than not for folks who are involved with sex workers. That
it's fuck exactly.
Disparage them.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, the hypocrisy is astounding. How the fuck do you talk bad about something and then
go participate to
something? Listen, this man ain't got nothing else. It's audacity.
He ain't got nothing else.
I'm just like, that floored me because I was like, that doesn't make any sense. There's nothing in my life that I enjoy that I just outwardly just like talk bad about.
That's right. It's so weird how like a lot of people who struggle to have decency and respect for other human beings are like that. And mm-hmm. it makes me think about like fast food workers, how people like always think that fast food workers deserve less. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be paid a certain amount of money and like they treat them, talk to them crazy and shit. Mm-hmm. But like you still want McDonald's.
Yeah, you're the first one in the line.
But you're still going to participate in the thing that you don't think the people working deserve living wages for.
Exactly.
And it's always like that, and I don't understand.
I literally don't understand that cognitive dissonance.
Right.
It's like a form of like, you have to be a certain amount of privileged, and then also still kind of, I don't know, like enjoy the culture of the underclass or something. Like it's weird. Like that shit is fucking weird.
It's like you think you deserve the service, but the people doing performing the service mm-hmm. don't deserve anything.
It's like the same people who don't want the MARTA to expand because they don't want people to be able to come into the rich neighborhoods, but they still want to hire people to clean their houses mm-hmm. and then be like,
how are you gonna get here?
That's what I'm saying. And that goes back to what we were saying earlier. Traffic is all day now because they voted against expansion of MARTA. So now we all
tired.
And I hate it.
Tired.
You bitches kill me. I hate it.
Honestly, anybody who lives in a great city, but it's got to be black and queer. And see, that's only Atlanta. But, you know, I'm open to moving.
Apparently Orlando, too. We just learned Orlando.
You know, like Orlando is pretty queer up here.
Really?
Yeah. And we can go to Disney World.
Yeah. If they still exist.
But they probably got traffic because this tourist was the amusement park capital of the world or something.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yep, it is.
But yeah, no. Fucking hypocrite. And so, yeah, this was something that he witnessed very early on. He also had, you know, siblings who were very bright, very outgoing. But he was described as very quiet, very, like, withdrawn. His mom was described as very attractive. And she would, like, wear, like, really big hair. And she would show up to the PTA meetings in, like, short skirts and stuff like that. So that was really significant because, well, I'll talk about that in a second. But, Ridgway, and this is a trigger warning for people for the child molestation warning. So he had a bedwetting problem up until he was 13. Now the documentary also said that like well into his teens. So I'm thinking like maybe from some disputed sources that maybe it was up until he was like 14, 15 maybe.
Yeah.
But this one said up until he was 13. And he's a full like a teenager. His mom would wash his genitals after he would wet the bed. Like she would run him a bath and like wash his body for him. And so because of this, I absolutely hate that. And I struggled with putting like child molestation because I feel like this is something like, this is like a special kind of category of like child molestation where it's like, it kind of feels like that Munchausen's by proxy thing where it's like you're smothering your child and you're doing this service for them, quote unquote. But it's like in doing that, you're creating like this weird sexual boundary.
Yeah.
And I wanted to label it as something else, but I couldn't find anything better than child molestation.
Yeah. It makes me think about emotional incest.
Yes.
Like, but I don't have the language for it either.
Yeah.
But that's like immediately where it takes me.
Right. Exactly.
In my mind.
Yeah. Like you don't bathe a teenager, especially when they're coming into their sexuality.
Like even if there's no like sexual component for you as the parent, like that's weird.
Yeah.
And you're harming your child in the process.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, definitely. So he said later on that he struggled with his sexuality because of this. Mm. And he also later said that it gave him conflicting feelings because it aroused him, like being touched in that way, which is understandable because bodies are bodies,
right?
And they react to things. So on one hand, there was like this weird like attraction almost, because at this time I think she was probably the only one who was doing that to him or like for him. Mm-hmm. But it also made him mad. It also gave him like these really angry feelings to her because she was the only one doing that. And he
probably felt some shame too.
Yeah,
he still went in the bed as a teenager.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And he said it made him want to kill her.
Ooh,
yeah. And so that was like the beginning of like this weird kind of relationship that he had with his mom. at some point, a psychologist in the documentary said that young boys, I don't know how I feel about this, but I'm gonna say it anyway. He said that young boys need to see their moms as asexual. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, he said that young boys need to see their moms as asexual. Seeing them as sexual people kind of fucks up how they see women at a very early age, which I don't know. I feel like I wanted to see where he's trying to go, but I couldn't fuck with it because right. You shouldn't have to see women as asexual in order to respect them or to right. disconnect your yeah. sexuality from them.
Right.
I think that her, you know, the short skirts and stuff, it's fine. Like, her being attractive and her wearing her hair out like she did, that by itself is not, that's not, that's okay. There's no yeah. problem with that. But I think combined with the fact that she was so physically close to him,
yeah.
doing that, you know, the, you know, watching him and stuff like that, I think that's what made him see her as, like, weird.
Yeah. Because yeah. that psychologist's take is, like, horphobic, mm-hmm. you know, like, exactly. it's like yeah. she was too sexy mm-hmm. to be yeah. a mom. Moms can't be sexy.
Yeah. I think that if he had said it with the context of, like, somebody who is struggling with, like, being potentially molested, we don't know if that's yeah. the right word, or like having these sexual, like, bad sexual encounters. Mm-hmm. I don't know, but yeah, like
poor boundaries around sexuality,
exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It and then seeing his mom in a sexual way might make a strange combination, but in general, having like a hot mom isn't going to make you like a sexual deviant,
right? Exactly.
It shouldn't, that's not the reason right. why you become a sexual deviant.
Yeah,
like, that's not
exactly. And that's what I was thinking. I wanted to add that in there just so we could talk about that. Mm-hmm. But I just didn't like that. And I hate when that happens, because it's kind of becoming this thing where, like, a lot of men go into the field of psychology and they take those biases with them.
Yeah.
And you take patriarchy with you. And that's one of the reasons why people seek out therapists who look like them, or like yeah. psychologists who look like them, because if you don't have a lens on culture and all these different identities, you know, where does queerness play?
It's yeah.
Like, right. where does transness, you know, yeah. or just, you know, respect for other people's sexualities, where does that play into that?
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. I feel like that's kind of, like, outdated, but at the same time, I still wanted to talk about that. So
it's like, also, like, when people try to say, like, keep politics out of it, like, it's impossible.
No. Yeah.
It's involved in every aspect
politics
of my life.
Politics come from lived experience.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's, you can't. I mean, yeah. psychology isn't black and white. Like, yeah. like, you can have somebody who thinks that this is fact, but no, that's not the case when it comes to, like, literally everybody else. So
yeah,
I hate that.
Absolutely. So Ridgeway, he also struggled with dyslexia, and it caused him to lose a year of credit in high school. So he had to he didn't graduate until he was like 20. Friends and family described him as friendly but a little bit weird, which is common amongst, like, these, you know, the early years of, like, when we cover these perpetrators of crime. So the first instance of him being violent, and this is a trigger warning that I forgot to put into the early trigger warnings for extreme violence. So he wanted to kind of see what it would be like to hurt somebody. So when he was 16, he stabbed a 6-year-old child. He lured him to the woods. He stabbed a 6-year-old child in the liver, and he survived the attack. But he led him into the woods, and, you know, he stabbed him, and then he just wiped the blade on the boy's shoulder and then just left. And he said that he told him, like, oh, I just wanted to see, like, what it would be like, basically.
What the fuck?
And they, some other psychologists said that, like, a lot of times this is what happens with serial killers. Like, they like have a trial run. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they'll have, like, this run in with somebody who may or may not survive the attack, but it's like, they just want to see what that level of violence is, and they mm-hmm. try it out. And then that's what enables them to be able to do it later.
Not testing the waters on murder.
Yeah. They also mentioned his IQ, but that's eugenics. So, yeah, I was just like, I don't know if that has anything to do with him being a perpetrator of crime. I think that he just needed heavy therapy, and he needed somebody to be talking to him and figuring out what the fuck was wrong with, you know, his home life.
Yeah.
So he graduated in 1969, and then right after that, he married his then 19-year-old girlfriend, Claudia Craig. He joins the Navy. He goes to Vietnam. I think he ended up in the Philippines.
Yikes. It's a terrible place for him to be.
And he does see combat. And while he's there, I don't want to say all he does. He's has prolific relationships with sex workers. Like, he's
figured.
Yeah, yeah, he has, like, many encounters with sex workers. And while he, and this is the part that sounded familiar to me, which is why I was like, damn, did we do this story and I'm doing somebody else's again? But so he catches gonorrhea, gets mad, and continues to have sex without protection with these sex workers. And which is, yeah, no, I'm just like, this is the 60s. Okay, cool. HIV is a thing, but it's not like rampant yet. Yeah. So it's like, you could have caught anything.
Mm-hmm.
And he still continues to have sex without protection. He comes back home. His wife is like, yeah, I had an affair. And then he, you know, he was fucking sex workers. So their marriage doesn't even last a year. Damn. So they get divorced. He gets married again to a woman named Marcia. They have a son in 1975, and when the baby turns 5, she leaves him. She's out the fucking door. There's not too much information on him, but it does, according to him, both his first two marriages ended because of infidelity on both sides, is what he says. And I don't know. I'm not saying that that's not a thing. I'm not saying that women don't cheat. But whenever violent men, or whenever, like, men who are, like, hypersexual or something like that, be like, oh, yeah, she cheated too. It just doesn't sound, it doesn't resonate with me.
It's like, I have more questions.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like, yeah.
There's more to that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Because, I don't know, it sounds reactive. It's like, your nigga be out here, like, your non-nigga, be out here cheating and, you know, fucking around with sex workers and stuff while y'all married. Okay, y'all, I'm gonna go do something too. I don't know, just kind of, yeah, that make more sense to me than y'all just cheating on each other out the blue. Like, I don't know, it doesn't make sense.
Like, off rip.
Also, at some point during his second marriage, he became very religious. So he would go preaching from door to door.
That's a weird,
a weird turn of event.
Yeah.
He would go preaching from door to door. He would read the Bible out loud at work and at home, which is annoying as fuck. I would get his ass fired.
Fuck.
I'll go to HR.
Can
and be
you
like,
shut the fuck up?
No, for real. Because I'm
reading
loud,
anything out loud.
At work?
You go goddamn much. You about to meet him.
Like, no, fuck for up. Real. Like, that's what I'm saying.
That is so annoying.
God can hear you in your head. If you think it in your head, you don't have to say it out loud. I don't have to hear that shit. Thank you. He also insisted that his wife at the time follow the strict teachings of the Bible, or what, strict teachings of their pastor. And sometimes he would also cry after sermons or after reading the Bible. He was a fucking drama queen. Yeah. So he, later on, his all of his ex-wives, all of his girlfriends said that he had an insatiable sexual appetite and that he loved having sex multiple times a day. He would also try to, like, have sex in public, or, like, loved having sex in the woods, because the risk of being caught was, like, very... the risk of being caught, like, turned him on, basically. So he later also admitted to having a fixation with sex workers. He said that he had a love-hate relationship with them. And he, again, like his dad, he always complained about their presence in the neighborhood. But he also took advantages of, you know, them mm-hmm. being available to him. He said he hated prostitutes, quote unquote, but he also didn't want to pay them for sex, which, I don't know, felt a little creepy to me. It's like he felt like he was entitled to it.
Right.
Like, he didn't want to have to, like, treat it like a service. He wanted to treat it like he was entitled to it and he didn't have to do anything for it. So now we're back to when the murders stopped.
Mm-hmm.
This is around the time when he met a woman named Judith Mawson. He falls in love. He immediately just, like, stops, well, seemingly stops to killing and, like, all the bullshit or whatever. By now, he's a truck painter. He's, like, known as this, like, this super normal guy. She's a 40-year-old divorcee. She has kids and stuff like that. So he kind of like joins her family, basically. They're dating, and she says he's perfect, like the perfect guy, perfect gentleman.
That's horrifying.
No,
yeah, absolutely.
That freaks me out.
She never
so bad.
He never cheated. He never had, like, any run-ins with the law. Like, he was completely normal. He used to play with her kids. He used to babysit the grandkids and stuff like that. Like,
he killed, like, 2 million people.
Exactly. She said they had a full 13 years. Well, she said she literally did it.
13 years.
Because, you remember, the killing stopped.
For
13 years. And then up until 2001, which was, like, a week ago.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that's when, you know, they find the DNA. So they had like over a decade where they were in this relationship.
After he had already done all that stuff?
After he had already done all that stuff.
Oh my God. I would have to rip my own
skin
off my body.
Devastated. Oh my God. She was, and we'll talk about that later. She was absolutely devastated. So she moved in some months later after they stopped, after they started dating. They lived together for a while before they ended up getting married. But she did notice that there was no carpet in his house. She said that, you know, nothing like really jumped out. There was some weird stuff, but it didn't really like worry her.
Yeah.
Like the fact that there was no carpet in the house and he let her pick out the carpet. He was like, yeah, do whatever you want with the house and stuff like that. She was like, oh yeah, you know, the house needs a woman's touch, you know, that whole thing. And so she picked out the carpet, you know, decorated the house and stuff like that. They got married 3 years after she moved in. She said he was a great stepfather, and she just like she just did nothing ever really like set off any alarms, basically. So come to find out, he was actually a suspect for the Green River murders, but he beat the lie detector test every single time.
That's why I don't believe in lie detector
tests. I thought about you because I was like, Aaron, this is why Aaron don't lie.
I don't believe that shit.
Lie detector test. He beat that shit. Because psychopaths, like clinically, do not see human beings as like subjects. They see them as objects. So he was always able to like disconnect from his humanity, and then like his, you know, heart, your heart rate not going to go up if you're lying because you don't give a fuck.
Yeah.
Like, you don't think of these people as people.
You know, like, I feel like anybody who has intrusive thoughts or anything like that, like, you have those times where you question whether or not you're a good person.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is one of the clear examples of, like, first of all, psychopaths don't ask themselves that question.
Yeah.
But also, like, I don't know, I feel like my body reacts to, like, shitty shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, like.
Like, you're like, gonna, your fingers are gonna sweat.
Yeah, like, yeah. I get, like, stressed out. Like, it's, like, I don't know. That's wild to me. To be able to consistently beat a lie detector test after having murdered, like, dozens of people.
Yep.
It's absolutely wild. Like,
yeah.
you're not sweating at all. Like, you're not breathing
nothing.
Heavy.
Your heart not.
You're just there.
You're not
you're just chilling. Like, it might as well just be a sunny Sunday afternoon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no,
well, that's just as terrifying as like the killing part.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah,
it's almost scarier.
Yeah,
yeah. To be able to keep your composure, because
yeah.
I feel like in a moment of anger or in a moment of, you know, like extreme violence, that is, I don't want to say it's understandable, but yeah, that's what you need to do in that moment to like get to this, because I guess like stimulation or whatever that serial killers need before they have their cool down period and kill again and stuff like that. But being able to purposely like bring yourself back down and just be like, yeah, no, it's cool. Like, what? I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You pass?
And you're probably thinking of it too. Like, it's in your brain.
Yeah.
And you're able to just be like, no.
Mm-mm. And to be a cop and to be one of the cops that interviewed him, I would be so shook.
I would never trust anybody again in my life.
Ever.
How could you?
And I understand why a lot of cops are like, you know, law enforcement be like, they be having like fucked up marriages or like fucked up relationships and be alcoholics. No. Because
you like, come across shit, people like this.
That shit right there is scary as fuck. So yeah, he denied all the he passed all the lie detector tests. And this is around the time when he's brought in again in 2001. So we're back to when the DNA matches up with him. He denied all the charges. By this time they had only matched his DNA to a few of the bodies. But after more DNA turned up, that's when he just like flat out admitted that he killed them all. He was just like, okay, I've been manipulating y'all. I did it.
Please.
Yeah. I killed them all.
No.
And so
how did his wife not end up like in a behavioral health unit?
Yeah, I don't think I would have been able to move forward.
The way I would be in Switzerland, like, give me the ethical assisted
euthanization.
Because, yeah, bitch, yeah. I don't have nothing else to live for. I'm sorry. Because
I lived in a home for 13 years with a man who did this.
I had sex with a man.
He watched my children.
Oh, my God.
And fathered, because he was with them for 13 years.
Yes.
That's horrible. My skin is, like,
yeah, no. Crawling. I would feel disgusting. I would need to, like, bathe in, like,
acid.
Bleach. And...
take it all out.
I don't need to bathe in depth of hell. Because I just got to die.
And drink some. Like,
I got to go.
No, absolutely. The fuck.
I got to go. Oh, my God.
So
the likelihood that, like, Well, maybe not us because we're black, but the likelihood that somebody has been with somebody who has done something fucked like up, that.
Yeah,
it's like it's higher than any of us want to admit.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's way higher than And listen, I just have to give it up to God.
Right?
I'm not doing this no more.
I just like one of the biggest, like the first big serial killer situation that I remember like experiencing as a kid was BTK.
Uh-huh.
And that always just creeped me out how his wife was like, no, we thought he just like went to work. Like nothing was weird. Da, 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 mm-hmm. da. Like that used to be one of my biggest fears, like from childhood because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like what if I wake up next to someone and find out they're a fucking serial killer?
But the thing is like, and I don't know, I don't want to victim blame his wife, but like, there's gotta be something. There has to be something.
You say that, but it's like, it makes me think about like how that question of like why people don't recognize Clark Kent as Superman. Like you don't see things you don't expect to see. So like why
you're
not
looking out for
right.
Yeah.
So like you might be like, oh, my nigga a little weird.
Yeah.
But like you're not like, my nigga a little weird, so he must be a serial fucking murderer.
Yeah, well like, now I'm gonna be like that.
Because from now on. We've all had those moments where like your partner might be like, oh, I'm finna be home soon or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then they don't come home till like 3-4 in the morning or something like that.
Yeah.
And you'd be like, oh yeah, we just got extra drinks or something like that.
Right.
There's always
and like, okay.
those moments.
You don't think like,
normal.
Oh, you just killed three people.
Right.
Right.
Oh yeah, you had to like get rid of the evidence and that's why it took you so much longer to get back home, you know. And that, and like you said, like because we're black, it's way less likely that, because you're going to get caught the first time. You're going to get
right.
caught. You're going to get caught with
no
weed on you. Like,
right. Ain't no five, ain't no cluster.
Yeah, no, exactly. So, yeah. So in exchange for, I guess, like a life sentence instead of the death penalty, this is when he starts to talk about his approach. And this is another trigger warning for just general fucking creepiness, because this is weird. Okay, so during his approach, what he would do is he'll pull up and, you know, offer, you know, his to solicit services or whatever. And he would show them a picture of his kid, or he would have his kid in the car.
No.
Or he preferred to take them to his house. So they felt
he was doing this in his house that his wife lived in.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the wife before the 13-year-old.
Oh yeah, my bad. I'm tripping. Like,
this is the original.
This is before Judith. Yeah, this
right.
is Marcia.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have his
still
in the car. And so he preferred to take them home. And then once he this is the hard part. So what he would do is, you know, they would be having sex or whatever, and he preferred to, I guess, like switch positions. And then once he got them in a position where he could approach from behind, then he would strangle them. So he would either use ligatures or he would use his forearm to like pull back, and then
Ooh.
They were defenseless at that point. So that was his MO for everybody. He also did it in like his car and stuff like that.
What did he do for a living?
He was a truck painter.
A truck painter?
Yeah. So he had one of those, like, I'm assuming that he had, like, one of those, like, raper vans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, the windowless van that we know now
yeah.
is, like, a fucking, like,
mm-hmm.
red, super red flag. Had one of those, and then he would be able, kind of like the, I want to say, like, the Cleveland killer, or the guy I covered, in California, the black man who had like the van or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and then he would get people to like clean it out and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that kind of van. And so now, in exchange, you know, for this, you know, sentence or whatever, he's guiding them to dump sites where dozens of women are at each site. Now, he's also talking like, if you watch the documentary, he's also talking like so normal, like, and that's the super scary part. It's like it's like he's having a conversation with them. He's like, yeah, no, yeah, there's dozens right over there, and then I will kill them, and then like, you know, and then I'll be like gone or whatever. And I'm just like, what the fuck? And this man did not even flinch. He didn't even blink when he was telling these stories.
That's horrible.
So he says that he didn't remember, like, they kept trying to get, like, more information out of him because he confessed to way more than they found. So
mm-hmm.
he says, like, I don't remember faces. I barely remember, like, the race, like, of the person and stuff like that. And the psychologist was like, that goes back to him thinking that, like, humans are objects.
I was going to say, they truly meant nothing to him.
Yeah, he truly did not see them. But he did admit to some other, like, crude stuff that he tried to do, and this is another trigger warning for necrophilic acts. So Linda Rules Linda Rule, the one whose boyfriend was her pit or whatever, mm-hmm. she was really young. He tried to set her hair on fire, which is like, it feels like a little boy playing with like an ant pile kind of thing, which is like really sad and really fucking gross. Because the bodies were left in clusters, they were sometimes posed. Like, he would pose the bodies, and they were usually nude. He also said that he would revisit the bodies for necrophilic acts, and then he would keep coming back until the bodies were, like, too, quote-unquote, decomposed, and then he would stop.
I feel like we did another case like that.
Yeah.
The one that you did?
Yeah, the doll. Like, he the doll. Paper mache?
Yes.
So, yeah. No. I feel like that needs to be researched more. Like, people need to, I don't know, that needs to be, like, its own set of research or something like that. I don't know. Because why people do that is beyond me. Because he said it didn't even sexually gratify him. He said he only did it because that made it less necessary to find live victims. Like, if he revisited the bodies, then he didn't have to go out and find, like, a live woman to hurt, basically. And it reduced his risk of being caught.
Or so, you could just not have sex.
Like, you can, like, or you could just not. Because most of the bodies weren't discovered until they were skeletal remains, there's still a couple of the victims who were found, but they weren't identified. And he also admitted that he would come back and, like, dump gum wrappers, cigarettes, and all kind of, like, weird materials to, like, confuse the police, basically. Because if they found that, then they'd be like, oh, this is so-and-so's DNA. They was being real sloppy. You know, that type of shit. So, like, it could have been somebody else that killed
him. So, he just, like, put random cigarette butts and stuff.
Yeah, he would put, like, random trash so they would, like, think it was somebody else.
I hate to say this, but that's actually kind of smart.
Yeah, that's what I said. It's very diabolical. And, I don't know. Unfortunately, a lot of people who are organized serial killers are highly intelligent, which is fucking scary.
Yeah.
So going back to Judith, you remember that you said there had to be something. So she did, you know, like how we said, like, you might be living with somebody or you have a partner or whatever, and it's just weird stuff, but it's like, that's nothing.
Yeah.
So, like, there would be times when he'd be like, oh, I'm going to be late. You know, I'm going to go pick up some food or something like that. Mm-hmm. But he wouldn't come back with no food. Or he would be like, oh, I'm going to the junkyard. I got to go pick up some parts or something like that. But he wouldn't come back with parts.
Mm-hmm.
That type shit. So, of course, at the time, she just, like, didn't think that that was a thing. But now she's, like, re-questioning these moments. Like, okay, well, he went to go get food. Did he eat the food there and then, like, you know, come back after, you know? Or did he go to the junkyard and just didn't get anything because he didn't find what he was looking for, you know? So she's
I'm sorry. My partner leaving the house to go get food and not coming back with some for me is a fireable offense. All on its own. Like,
honestly,
serial killing aside, like, you went and ate and you ain't bring me nothing?
Right. You ate in the car on your way here?
This is another thing that I was thinking about. People always shit on, like, you know, I guess, like, femme culture or, like, the way, like, femme partners move. Like, oh, when she get mad because you didn't eat with her or something like that. I feel like that's kind of a way to kind of shut down, like, women or just, like, femme people in general, like, investigating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that y'all could go and do y'all fuck shit. Because especially when you're dealing with, like, black and brown folks, we don't play that shit. Everything is suspect.
Yeah.
Why the fuck did you leave the house talking about you finna go to such and such to get a burger, but you, one, didn't come back with no food for yourself.
Right.
In the parking lot. And then, two, you didn't get any shit.
Right.
I have a problem. Why the fuck did you even tell me about that?
Right.
You just got my mouth watering and shit telling me no food, and then you didn't go to get me nothing.
Never in a million years.
Yeah, no, it's definitely. So I feel like a lot of that, like, pushback is, like, people trying to, like, get away with their bullshit and have their excuses. Like, damn, y'all done made it hot. Now we can't go out for food no more and not come back with nothing. You know, that's what I think that is. And that's what I was thinking about when she said this. And the look on her eyes, I mean, this woman was devastated. Like,
I can only imagine.
Even while she was telling the stories, like, she was choking up, and it's been years. So it's just like, I said, I would never recover.
No.
So in confession, he also blamed, like, the women in his life.
Like, of course he did.
Yeah, his relationships with women, his mom, his wives, girlfriends, and all the stuff like that. And yeah, so we get to 2003 where he's officially been charged with, like, all of the counts now, but he's not going to face the death penalty. So he's facing 48 counts of murder.
Jeez.
And as they're listing out 48 is
a that's lot. A lot.
They list out every name. They like, okay, count one, such they, and such name.
They should, yes.
And his wife was there, like, in the courtroom or whatever. And she was like, when she heard them list out the count and he pled guilty, like, it fucked with her so bad. Because it was like, now it's like hitting home.
Yeah.
Because she knew, and she was still trying to, like, put all the pieces together. But, like, when she heard that, it, like, everything sunk. And it was like, oh, shit. Like, this is so fucking real. I've been living with a serial killer. And every single one, count two, count 47, like, count 48. He pled guilty to.
I would be vomiting. I would be literally gutted.
I was literally holding my breath while she talked about this part because, like I said, flatline. Like, no remorse. He wasn't crying. He wasn't slouched or nothing like that. He was like, guilty. Guilty. Mm-hmm. Yeah, guilty. Every single one. And so they have impact statements or whatever. All the families get up there and they're saying, like, you know, stuff like, I hope somebody strangles you. You know, that whole thing. I hope you spend the rest of your life in prison. You will never know how you affected us and stuff, as it should. Mm-hmm. Just making, like, all these, like, you know, hateful, justified comments. But Linda Rule's father gets on the stand and says, you know, God says to forgive. So I want you to know that you are forgiven.
I hate it.
No, I hate it too. And it kind of reminded me of the St. Lucian guy, or like he's from the islands, who was murdered by a cop who went in the wrong
apartment.
And
his brother.
Yep. His brother forgave the cop.
I was like, I will come back from the dead to beat your ass.
No, for real. Because don't you forgive nobody on my behalf. No. I'm putting it right here for the podcast and everybody. If anything ever happens to me, know that you have my permission to be hateful, burn the whole country down. Mm-hmm. I don't want you to hug nobody, throw rocks at them.
Yeah.
Like, the fuck?
Yeah, no, exactly what you just said. Matter of fact, I want to put it in my will. My estate needs to sue anybody talking about they gonna forgive my killer. Because, bitch, who? No, he knew what the fuck he was doing. And psychopathy is like a medical condition. There is things that you can do to resist that shit. No, like, they're not naturally serial killers. You are a serial killer who is a psychopath. And that didn't need to happen. So, yeah, he got up there and said that he was forgiven or whatever. And this is when Gary starts crying. Like, when he hears this, like, he just, like, visibly broke down and started crying. I was like, where is this coming from?
Right. Performance. Because he didn't cry when they were asking you about all 48 people.
Exactly. So he was convicted on all 48 counts.
Good.
Period.
He got 48 life consecutive life sentences.
Holy fuck! I've never heard of that.
Yeah, me either. No, that shit was just
they gonna lock that ghost up, nigga.
No, like, for real. He gonna be on the ghost tour in New Orleans,
right?
So this nigga still locked up. Right. He's here right now,
still in there. Look to the bars; you can see him right there.
Yeah, and his ass ain't never getting out. It don't need to. But he confessed to over 90. He confessed to over 90 killings. It says 71 through 90 plus, but I always believe, I think it's like 100 something.
Yeah.
He was just like, I don't give a fuck.
So casual, yeah. And this is when y'all discovered the bodies. This isn't talking about like how long he was doing this shit before y'all discovered that shit.
Right.
So, yeah, no, absolutely not. So, just a little note, like from another psychologist who talked about, I thought this was really interesting. She said that like predisposition to violence isn't a problem by itself. You never really see it until there's like specific conditions that cause it to grow. It's kind of like a seed. Like, seeds don't do anything by themselves.
Yeah. Right.
You put them in the soil, you give them water and sunlight, blah, 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 then they're going to grow into a plant and stuff like that. So there's so many people who are like quote unquote good people or whatever, and they have a predisposition to violence, but you would never know because like they had good relationships with their parents, they had support from their community, things like that.
Yeah.
Which I really thought was interesting because we've said that so many times on the podcast. So yeah. That is the story of the Green River Killer.
What's the name of the documentary and where can I watch it?
It's called Real Crime on YouTube. If you just like, if you look up Gary Ridgway without a D on YouTube, I'm sorry, Gary Ridgway without an E, I'm sorry, on YouTube, that's like the first one that comes up. Okay. It's like Real Crime and it's like, it's only 45 minutes. But yeah. It's definitely worth the watch.
Yikes.
Yeah. And they also, like, on the Wikipedia, they also have, like, a list of... I was going to name the victims, but then as they kept going, I was like, oh, no, this is 48 victims. And that's just the ones that they can name. So that's why I didn't name them all.
Wow.
But, yeah.
Well, Judy, I hope you found some semblance of peace mm-hmm. and washed the top 5 layers of your skin off.
Yeah. No, I definitely... Mm-hmm.
That is horrifying.
Terrifying. And to the families, definitely love and light to all of y'all. Because that is so terrifying. And I know that's something that I would never recover from.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. So.
Oof.
So, yeah.
Well, thanks, Fine, for the nightmares.
Right. Okay, y'all. We'll be back with Should This Be a Crime?
Should this be a crime? Let's go.
Okay.
We're back with Should This Be a Crime? This is Carter reading the Should This Be a Crime? I didn't say that earlier so that y'all forget the distinction. Also, I've been wanting to get this off my chest. Just a reminder, they, them, not a lady, not a woman.
Yeah.
I love you all so much, but when you're on the Instagram and in our Facebook, yeah, if you're referencing me, that's not a, yeah. Thanks. So for Should This Be a Crime, an article from BET that was published May 12th of this year, titled Jamie Foxx's Daughter Provides Update on Actor's Health. Corinne Fox had a few words for gossip blogs spreading false info, but had good news about her dad. Jamie Foxx's daughter is providing an update about her father's medical condition while debunking the wild social media conspiracy theories floating around about the actor's health. Taken to her Instagram story on Friday, May 12th, Corinne Fox captioned a screenshot of a post by a gossip blog about supposed dire conditions the 55-year-old was in, and the caption, update from the family, sad to see how the media runs wild. My dad has been out of the hospital for weeks recuperating. In fact, he was playing pickleball yesterday. Thanks for everyone's prayers and support. She continued, we have an exciting work announcement coming next week, too. At this time, it isn't clear what procedures or outpatient care Fox is currently going under, if any. Understandably, no pictures or video of Jamie were shared by Corinne. Last month, people reported that Jamie Foxx was steadily improving after he suffered a medical complication earlier in the month. While details were scarce at the time, similar to now, Corinne did reveal in a post that luckily, due to quick action and great care, her father was already on his way to recovery. Foxx had been filming his upcoming Netflix movie, Back in Action, in Atlanta, Georgia, when the incident occurred, and the set was ultimately shut down. An unidentified source who spoke to the outlet claimed filming resumed the following day using a stand-in for Fox on set. And I'll read what the blog post shared that Corinne referenced in her Instagram post. It was quoted saying, Jamie Foxx's loved ones reportedly preparing for the worst. So, yeah, that is our Should This Be a Crime?
Yeah, I remember seeing those. It was like Jamie Foxx's family reportedly preparing, like, hoping for the best, but preparing for the worst.
Yeah.
And then it was like, I don't know, it was like a domino effect. It was like just one kind of said that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, okay, whatever. And then a whole bunch of them started saying, I'm like, damn, when did they get reports? Like,
right.
Because Kevin Hart was like, oh, I spoke to the family. Like, he's doing better. You know, that he's on the mend. Like, they just, you know, working on him turning the corner and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, I don't know, all these blogs, it's like sharks. But it was always like that kind of like off-brand, like,
yeah,
really unserious type bullshit. And I was like, and I'm so glad I didn't feed into it, I guess, because I'm growing up, because like when that Queen Elizabeth shit happened, I was like, believe it, you know?
Yeah, I believed it immediately.
But I think that's because she white and because she's a fucking monarch and monarchy needs to die, but that's a whole nother conversation. But I was just like, where are these blogs getting this information if they're not updating people on his medical, you know, his medical status?
You don't have any real sources,
right? And his daughter is saying, she was the first one to say something like, y'all pray for my father, like, mm-hmm. he had a medical emergency or whatever. And then she ended up deleting the post. Probably because she was advised not to, you know, tell everybody about, you know, what was going on. Maybe it can, like, affect his employment prospects and stuff like that. But I'm just like, y'all are so disappointing. Y'all are so disappointing. And the first thing I thought about was the Tory Lanez trial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, before the verdict came out, there were so many blogs like, he was found not guilty. Or, The DNA on the gun was found negative or whatever, and it wasn't Tory Lanez and stuff like that. Y'all be doing anything to get the first scoop,
right?
Just so y'all can be like, oh, okay, you heard it here first, folks. Right. It's like y'all play with people's lives,
literally
playing with people's reputations, and you don't talk about people's bodies like that. That's so fucking weird.
And you also gotta think, like, not everybody that cares about Jamie Foxx or related to Jamie Foxx, a friend of Jamie Foxx, may not be like clued into what is actually happening.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So they see a title like that and they believe it, and then they're affected. Like, that's fucked up. I know my heart sank.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, and I'm just a fan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He has
friends and family that it probably isn't at the hospital,
right,
or isn't able to be. So they see shit like that and they think something happened.
Mm-hmm.
That's so fucked up.
Reports. I'm like, where the fuck are y'all getting these reports from? Like,
yeah. And it's so wild. Like, these blogs, they only care about being the first out, not being the most accurate. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, it's just...
It makes me think about the Bryant family.
Yes. Oh, Jesus.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, that was terrible.
It was.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, we just had this conversation. Well, not really, but, like, kind of with Chadwick Boseman.
Yeah.
When he popped out and he looked really sickly and really skinny and stuff like that. Everybody had something to say, but it's like... Y'all are not entitled to people's bodies.
Right.
Why are we still having this conversation over and over again? If a celebrity chooses to update y'all on their status, like, oh, like I'm on the mend, or like I'm doing better, or like this is what, you know, I'm dealing with as far as like my health concerns or whatever,
mm-hmm.
then that's on them. And then, okay, you can receive that information as a fan, and, you know, kind of like Kid Fury, like how he updated us mm-hmm. on like him going to like a facility.
Mm-hmm.
That's for us to respond to and be like, okay, good, get better, we love you. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like,
yeah.
You're a fan, that's it. You're not entitled to be like, oh, well, you know what?
Give me an update.
Yeah, give me an update. How's what's going on now? Like,
right.
What condition are you
treating you like?
Yeah, exactly. That's very fucking weird. And parasocial relationships people need to dial it back at this point. We have way too much access to
people. The whole conversation about parasocial relationships really needs to be had
mm-hmm.
because
people think they're entitled. Like, even if that's your family, you're still not entitled. So
I think we talked about briefly on the pod before about like that person who decided to stop posting her children on TikTok, and mm-hmm. someone was like, "Where's our baby? We miss our baby." Like, that's so weird. Are y'all okay?
No, yeah. Obviously the fuck not. Obviously not, because I mean, of course everybody loves Jamie Foxx. He's a fucking national treasure,
right?
You can get on the internet and be like, damn, I hope we don't lose Jamie Foxx.
Like, we literally don't even care. He loves white women. That's how much we love him. Like, we love him.
It's not so talented. That is true.
For real.
That's very fucking
like,
true.
Like, you keep about it a little bit, but like,
yo, we don't give a fuck. It ain't
get
like,
out of here.
It ain't like it is with Michael B. Jordan and like, John Jameson.
Right. Right.
They love these white bitches. You know, Jamie Foxx is like, he loves these white bitches, but it's cool.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, that's how fucking
talented. He's on the Jamie Foxx show.
Exactly.
He played Ray Charles.
It is.
I'm not gonna stop playing that. Come on. No, I'm crying because that's literally how it is. Like, he's an exception to the rule. Okay?
Yes.
And so it's okay to like have those feelings, or to even mourn celebrities because you do value their work and mm-hmm. you do see like their personality shine, and which is exactly what happened when we lost Chadwick Boseman. Like, that was mm-hmm. a sad fucking time.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, for people to like press him on that and be like, why are you not updating this? Why haven't he could at least post a picture or something? Like, no. He can't. Like, what if he had a stroke? What if like half of his face was like fucking paralyzed or something? And he felt really self-conscious about that. And he don't want nobody talking about him the way y'all talked about Young M.A., the way y'all talked about Chadwick Boseman. Like, what if, you know, he don't want to see those jokes because what if that would affect his mental health? You never know.
Right.
What if it wasn't that big of a deal? Like,
right. What if he just needed to spend the night in the hospital?
Like, people are entitled to privacy.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
I don't know how we completely forgot that.
Social media.
People
fucked that up.
Entitled to privacy.
Yeah. People think they have, like, they're entitled to celebrity and they're entitled to knowing every single detail about their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm surprised
that's not
that his medical information wasn't leaked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah. I'm very shocked because I know that there's like certain levels of security where you can, you know, look at somebody's chart and stuff like that. You don't have to be a doctor to see that. You can literally just be a physician. You can high key be like, because I used to drop food off in hospitals before that. You can high key just like look at somebody's chart when you go in and deliver their lunch.
And weren't there like, I feel like when Beyonce was somehow the information about what hospital she was in got leaked. Like there, like that's fucking Beyonce. Yeah. So I'm shocked. But it could also be a thing where like he was in the hospital for a couple of days and now he's back home and he has really his own doctor. So he doesn't, the information isn't out there. But for somebody to say that he's dying, awful. Yeah. That's awful.
Yeah. Awful. If y'all were gonna lie, and I really hate that blogs even do that. If y'all were gonna lie and, you know, be sensational like that, why would you not lie and be like, oh, he's getting better?
Right. Well, because negativity is more impactful and the clickbait. But yeah, if you're gonna lie, if you're gonna make some shit up, at least make it be a positive.
Exactly.
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like journalistic integrity doesn't exist.
It doesn't. And that was another point that I was gonna make is like these blogs, I really, really, really fucking hate. I mean, The Root didn't do it. I don't think The Root did it. But there's so many up and coming black blogs that have the following and they have the potential to actually be a trusted source that black people want to look at. Yeah. Because we don't, as you see with CNN, they just had Trump on. We don't always want to look at that shit. Sometimes we just want to go to our people and figure out what the fuck is going on.
Right.
But y'all keep fumbling the bag.
Right.
Y'all keep just trying to be as sensational as exciting as the next blog or whatever. And that's literally how y'all fumble with the Tory Lanez shit. Now a white bitch who did her fucking job, like
Megan,
she was
the reporter,
the Megan the cutest. She was on that shift. She was like 9:48 a.m. We in the courthouse,
right?
Fuck days later, like she a fucking rapper or something. Like she had threads. She had the information. She took the time out to let y'all know, like, hey, we can't have cell phones in the courtroom. I'll update y'all when I can and stuff like that. That's what y'all need to be doing. You need to be having integrity. Getting the most likes or the most, I don't know, fucking saves on TikTok is not the goal.
And I feel like you're right. I feel like we're all primed for a reputable news source, like with journalistic integrity that caters to the culture. Like, I would love that.
I would love that.
I would love that.
Absolutely. I would 100% support that.
Yeah, no, same. But instead, y'all want to be fucking ableist. And y'all want to be entitled
and fat-phobic and all the other things,
and homophobic and all this extra shit. This just in: Megan Thee Stallion was fucking on the baby and like other niggas and shit like that. Guilty. Like, what? That's not the headline. What the fuck is going on in the case? Like, y'all are tripping. And now this white girl done got all these followers. I mean, I'm one of them. Sorry. Now this white girl done got all these followers, taking away an opportunity that you could have had. This was black culture's problem. This was black people's issue. Like, this was our shit, and we were supposed to hold each other accountable. And y'all missed that fucking opportunity. And y'all doing this exact same thing with Jamie Foxx. Now the Jasmine brand, Say Cheese. What's the other one? Is Say Cheese run by black people? I think the Jasmine brand is one of my.
I think the Jasmine brand is too.
Yeah, so she. I don't know.
Is that the first one who reported that Tory shit?
Yeah. I know No Jumper's ran by a fucking Nazi, so I know that shit ain't got shit to do with nothing. But like all of these blogs, now look at y'all. Y'all look fucking ridiculous, and nobody trusts y'all anymore.
Yeah, Sean Cotton created Say Cheese, and he's a black guy.
Okay, cool. Yeah, y'all look fucking ridiculous, and y'all look untrustworthy. And I think it should be a crime.
It is. It should be.
Y'all gotta stop speaking on people's shit when y'all don't know what the fuck's actually going on. That shit is just, on a basic level, just morally, like, wrong.
And we as an audience, not we, but the bigger we, need to hold these blogs accountable. Like, they're doing it for clicks. Stop clicking it. You know what I mean? Don't watch the video. And I know it's hard because you see an article that Jamie Foxx is about to die and you're like, holy fuck. But we gotta do a little bit more so that those blogs don't get the attention that they're looking for.
You gotta use some critical thinking.
Yeah,
I think it deserves a heavy citation with a mandatory media literacy class.
And an apology right now.
Yeah, right.
To me and to Jamie.
No, for real. Getting people all excited and heartbroken all at the same time.
Right. And Jamie Foxx, we hope you're doing better.
Yes.
Well, apparently you are doing better, so
we're
glad.
I'm excited to see your new movie. I love Cameron Diaz. Thanks for bringing her out of retirement.
Yes. Thank you.
Thank you.
To see who cloned Tyrone or whatever. I'm going to go watch all his shit.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Please. You can find us online at
Ayana Killa Podcast on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok, and Ayana Killa Pod on Twitter.
And you can listen to us on Apple Music. You can listen to us on Spotify. Literally anywhere where you can find podcasts except for Facebook.
Yeah.
All right. Y'all have a good week. See y'all next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.